I think the ripple effects are huge. Generally, what you see typically when projects aren't managed well is that they're over time and over budget, and the community doesn't get to take benefit of the asset as soon as they could. And not only that, but there's probably another project that could have been funded but has to be put on the shelf to pay for the one that's going over time and over budget.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm joined by Joanne Eden, Principal, Regional Service Leader, Project and Program Management for AIRP. Hey, Joanne, how are you?
Hi, Eric. I'm doing good. Thanks. How are you?
Good, good. I'm really excited to have this conversation. And, you know, obviously, we've gotten to know each other over the last couple of months as we're working together on some large programs. So it's always exciting for me to get to know more about a client and a friend and at a personal level. So before we jump right into it, I always like to start with good news and gratitude. And so I'll ask you, is there any personal or professional good news or gratitude you'd like to share with me in the audience?
There is actually. AIRP have just moved this week into our new offices at 140 Broadway. This is literally day two. So there's a bit of chaos going on behind me right now, but we'll be celebrating 40 years in New York in a few years' time. So we have a new home in which to celebrate it. So it's wonderful to see us getting bigger and better as every year passes. So we feel like a real New York firm now.
That's amazing. Congrats on the new office. And is it exciting and everything you hoped it would be?
It is a little just, we've got a few kinks to work out, but other than that, and we've got some of our colleagues that are still to move over. Yeah, it's literally day two.
How big is the office for AIRP?
We work out of a number of different offices here. We have one in Newark and this office here. So we're 500 across the two offices.
Wow. That's amazing. That's awesome. And so how many of them will be relocated to this new office?
We have a flexible work policy. Anyone's free to book desks in whichever office they choose. The seats will be open to everybody.
I love that. That's awesome. And 500, I didn't realize that. That's a huge practice. Very good. Congrats. That's amazing. Very cool. Well, my gratitude on show day is always to the guests. Thank you so much. I can only imagine how busy your days are, and to take some time out to talk to me is just, I'm just grateful for that. All right, great. Let's jump right into it. Let's learn a little bit about you. Tell me about yourself, your background. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? What was your formal education, if you had one?
Sure. As you can probably tell, I don't have a native New York accent. I was brought up in the UK and I went to the University of Manchester. I sort of did my undergrad and graduate studies in civil and structural engineering. So engineering is really at the heart for me. I'm a professional engineer, both sides of the pond, and a fellow of the Institution of Civil Engineers in London. And that was my first professional license that I obtained. And I've worked for AIRP now for over 30 years. I started out with them as an engineer, but about 25 years ago, I started to represent owners, initially just doing projects, but more latterly at a program level, and now for some really quite big government owners. And there, it's not really project challenges, it's more culture and organizational change challenges. Certainly, a lot of what I've been doing in the last 15 years, 20 years has been around alternative delivery, particularly design build. So it's very different for New York, but something we've done in the UK for a long time.
Very cool. And I actually love having conversations around alternative delivery because a lot of the owners are moving that way. But I've found very often they sometimes get pigeonholed into having to use an alternative delivery method, even if it might not be best suited for the current project. Do you ever come across that? Is that a challenge that
Yeah, I think sometimes you do see people seeing the new and the shiny as progressive design build, for example. We see a lot of people going, oh, great, we're going to try progressive. But I think it's all about having the right tool for the right project. So sometimes, yes, people do jump to the new and shiny and it isn't always best. But there's usually a good procurement route for any given project. So it's teaching people how to make good decisions at the front end.
Yeah, I think it's hard to do, but it's really important.
It is.
All right, going back to a little bit about your history, right? Started as an engineer, and I don't know why. I just always assumed you were an architect, but you're an engineer, so that's very cool. So am I. So how did your role like kind of evolve from that like technical, right? You started as an engineer to this more leadership and strategic role that you are currently in.
Sure. As part of my training in the UK, one thing that we have to do is we have to do different roles within industry. I started as a design engineer, but I was also required to get my chartership, which is my licensure, to go work as a contractor, to do estimating, to do scheduling. And so it was really during a period of time where I was working with a contractor in a CM role that I really started to realize that I enjoyed the coordination of designers, contractors, lawyers, client requirements and things. So that's really where I started to realize that I didn't want to do engineering for the rest of my life. And that's where I started moving more across to the owner's side and doing more work on the owner's side.
Very cool. And so earlier, you also mentioned like you had both the, I know obviously on the public side, but also some private work that you had worked on.
Yeah, I'd need to do the math, but I think I've probably done equal-handed public and private, probably over those 30 years, about half and half, something like that. So I've worked for big banks and I've worked for big infrastructure agencies.
So with those two verticals in mind, let's call it public and private, what are the specific challenges arising in like public work that maybe you don't see in private work? And then what's the flip? What are the challenges in private work that like you don't ever see in public work?
Oh, money, number one. I think the private sector obviously is very much better at funding projects. They don't start a project without thinking about how they're going to fund it. And so I think that's, it's not like the big infrastructure projects where you do a whole chunk of work at the front end and then go off and seek funding for the next 4 or 5 years. Meanwhile, escalation's going up and the value of your dollar's going down. That's something that I definitely see on the private side, people are much better at the funding requirements move along with the projects and everyone knows this has got to get paid for. And I think that's pretty tough in the public sector where we have to wait a long time for funds to come through. The challenge is the other way around. I think a lot of times in the private sector, you don't have the public and community engagement that is necessary for a lot of public projects, whether it's a new library or whether it's East Jails. I look at the Long Island Railroad project we worked on recently, the huge amount of community engagement and stakeholder management you have to do. I think private sector, in a way, get away without that. And obviously that can slow things down, but also can give better results. If you do it, everyone gets big benefit out of it.
Yeah, I found community engagement is important. And part of the reason I like doing the show and the reason the whole Building Better Future concepts is about how what we do does positively impact communities. And I'm sure both of us could sit here and talk about dozens and dozens of projects that were probably built to schedule and good quality. But really, at the end of the day, the best part about it was maybe the first time, like you mentioned a library, like the first time students walked into it and looked at read a book, right? Or sat down and studied. And the impact that we can really have in a community is just so important. And I've seen the private projects start to gear towards that too. I've seen them do more of that, like kind of stuff. It makes me feel good because we have not an even split, but we have a pretty good split of public work and private work that we work on as well. I will, to your point about money, I will say that sometimes the private industry does also have challenges with money. And we felt that at the end of the last cycle.
Yeah, but obviously there's the kind of business cycle and there's times when money is more free flowing than others. But generally, they don't go into a project not knowing how they're going to fund it, which I think we do sometimes here for the big infrastructure projects.
No, I totally agree with your sentiment. It was more tongue in cheek there because we had a few private developers that maybe did not pay all their bills on their last go around of projects. But still fun projects to work on. There's nothing better than building New York City. I love that.
Indeed. I'm sitting here on the 40th floor looking out at a beautiful city skyline.
Yeah, it's very nice. And speaking of, let's say, projects that maybe don't pay or are tough to complete, how have you seen like the poorly managed projects affect like the ripple effects of that from like a cost perspective? And then also just we were talking about how the projects we work on impact community in a positive way, but how that could also maybe be a negative impact on the community during construction, especially if it's not meeting schedule or other constraints that they had.
Yeah, I think the ripple effects are huge. Generally, what you see typically when projects aren't managed well is that they're over time and over budget, and the community doesn't get to take benefit of the asset as soon as they could. So, and not only that, but there's probably another project that could have been funded but has to be put on the shelf to pay for the one that's going over time and over budget. And I do think this is where we've been working with DDC on their pilot design build program, and the first projects are actually being delivered this year. And hopefully we're going to have kids in a pool this fall, which is probably years ahead of where it would have been if we'd gone through the conventional procurement route. So I think if you can manage projects, bring them in on time, on budget, it creates money for additional projects, but it also that would have been spent on those delays. And also it delivers benefit to the community. Those kids might have been out of school by the time the pool was ready under with conventional procurement. And actually, it's interesting. It's why the UK actually moved towards alternative procurement in the 1990s there. There was too much government money that was being spent on delays and claims. And there was a huge kind of reinventing the industry. It's a small country, right? So you can literally have a government inquiry into an industry, and they decided that they had to think of different ways of doing things because they couldn't keep pouring government dollars into projects that were just going over time and over budget.
Well, that's so interesting. So when you say alternative delivery, right, because it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, is that typical design build? Is that what we're talking about? Or are you talking about other like P3 methods? And
there's other things. They experimented with everything in the 1990s. There was design build. CM was certainly being used. P3s started in the 1990s because governments couldn't afford to fund everything that needed doing through taxation. So there was a whole raft of different procurement methodologies that took root in the 1990s. And there's a good 30 years of experience there now. And some of them have evolved, some of them have fallen out of fashion, et cetera, for various reasons. But certainly when I started my career in the early 90s, that was one of the things you had to learn about right out of college, was the different forms of procurement and how they all worked.
That is very cool, because I know even here, talking about not being able to maybe fund all of the public works needs through taxation, I think we're going to be in a similar boat if we're not already. And like Port Authority has tested out some P3 models, and they seem—
Indeed.
And there's other parts of the country that are working on that. Was that something that was successful in Britain? I don't know if you had any involvement in any of those types of projects.
I didn't in the P3s. I did an awful lot of design build, which is why I'm doing what I'm doing now. But we have other people here that I work with that have done the P3s, right back to those early ones in the early UK days. So yeah, it's a really interesting landscape, and you can turn into a procurement nerd when you really get into this stuff.
No, I think it's great. And I find that very fascinating. I didn't know that about Britain exploring all those alternative delivery methods early on. Because even here, they're still newer, right? Some of our city and state agencies are fighting for the authority authorization to maybe use like a design build. Or I know recently DDC got their CM build in the pilot program. I don't know if that's what you were mentioning earlier when you were talking about working with them on a pilot program.
They have a public buildings program, which has been running for about 3 or 4 years now to try and do some new public buildings. I think it was started in about 2019, right when they got the legislation. So there's about just shy of $1 billion of construction over, I want to say 9 or 10 projects right now.
Wow.
That is their pilot program for largely social infrastructure projects.
Very cool. And obviously, these are all different types of hurdles. And what do you think is the biggest like technical and political challenge when you're managing these large public projects? Obviously, procurement methods is one of them, but tell us any others, or let's dive more into the procurement methods challenge.
I'm an engineer, so I always figure technical can be solved, but I see most of it is really political. And part of the difficulty is the time it takes to build stuff is usually over more than one political cycle. And so that can create a lot of noise for projects, particularly the bigger projects. Gateway, how many years has that been in the making? But I do think the industry could better serve ourselves by being able to articulate business cases better and the need more coherently. I worked on the Long Island Railroad project, and that was quite interesting. There was a very clear benefits case in terms of reduced accidents by putting grade crossings below grade, the noise pollution, the vehicle pollution from vehicles waiting at grade crossings that are now below grade. So I think we could do better at really measuring all the benefits that some of these projects bring rather than just maybe the technical benefit or the number of trains per hour or whatever.
Very cool. There's been, as a Long Islander, I always like to thank everyone that works on any of these Long Island Railroad projects. I'm an avid user of the system. When East Side Access opened up, I didn't realize how much that would change my day to day until I needed to go to Club 101. And instead of going to Penn and then either walking over or taking the 1, 2, or 3 or the ACE and then taking the 7 over and then walking across the street, I am now a one seat ride to there. And I grew up in Mineola, so a lot of the third track work with the raising tracks and lowering tracks, and it's changed. Like, the congestion is so much better in those areas. So speaking of programs like you're talking about, but also there's not as many accidents. Trucks were getting stuck under bridges. Yeah. So a lot of that work has been impactful in ways that maybe you can't see on the clear-cut dollars, or like you said, the clear-cut, exactly. Hey, how many more trains did we get? Maybe we got not that many more trains an hour, but maybe we reduced the traffic in the area by 30%, which is great.
The noise pollution, the air pollution, yep. All of that stuff. Yeah, I wish we could put numbers on that. Yeah. It might help us make better business cases for these things.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp., your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
I think insurance costs too, sometimes you have to look at, like, you know, I have a friend that works for the state, and when a truck does, let's say, hit a bridge or like all the insurance companies
it's
get
huge.
Them up,
the
someone's
got to
pay for repairs. Very cool. Yeah, no, that's great. Earlier, you had talked about how when you had leaped from the technical role as an engineer into more like this leadership and culture management and like that, the soft skills of it. And I always like to talk about leadership skills. It's something I constantly work on and I ask my team to constantly work on. So I'm going to ask you, what's like a simple thing teams can do to maybe improve collaboration? And as we become more global in nature, and I know you guys are a global firm, and I don't know this to be true, potentially you're using resources from all over the world, right? If they're specialized in something, or you guys can work together. So tell me about that. Like, how do we improve collaboration?
I think it's really about diversity of team. And I don't just mean racial diversity, because I know there's a lot of talk these days about diversity generally, but I think professional diversity of two. So I see the best decisions being made for projects when you have a contractor's input, a specialist trade input, a cost person's input, a schedule person's input, a designer's input, and different forms of design as well. Engineering, architecture. I think it really, having a professionally diverse team has got to lead to better outcomes.
Very nice. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think, again, diversity is a much larger word than maybe it's been pigeonholed into today. But that diversity of experience, and sometimes the younger members on the team are also just as impactful as more experienced people, because maybe they've been exposed to a new technology or they did a new case, that something that you and I hadn't seen. So I think that's great. And do you like...
Actually, technological diversity. Yeah. mean, they are definitely better at using all the new technologies and systems. And yeah, sometimes we have to open our eyes to that. And sometimes that's quite challenging for people, certainly my age. I don't know about your age.
I think it's hard for everyone. And the technology is moving so fast. I took an AI course earlier this year because you want to keep up. And I feel like everything I learned in that course, like within 3 months, was outdated, and they're like doing something totally different today. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know, it's intimidating in some ways because you feel like you don't want to be left behind. But it's scary on the other way, because you don't want to do too much and then it doesn't work or it doesn't integrate properly. And then you create other challenges for yourself. But technology is amazing. And with some of even the interns, I remember a couple of summers ago, we had an intern put together, like, it was like automatically able to pull from various websites, like RFPs and data related to them. And we were like trying to figure out, how do we use this now that we have the information? How do we effectively use it?
Yeah, we're very lucky as a large firm. Other people decide on the technological direction of the firm. But yeah, we're using AI internally now. And it helps tremendously with being able to just find things that we didn't know we had.
Yeah. It's very good about that. So when you're saying internally, are you using like mostly for ChatGPT and word processing, or do you have an internal system where you're able to, like, you're saying pull like old projects and documents and share?
Yeah, obviously we have a huge database of past projects. We're 80 years old as a firm next year. Probably not all of that is digitized, but past projects, information, best practices, proposals we've done, you name it, it's all there. And we are now really seeing the ability to mine that internal data and put it to better use, which is great to see.
Wow, that's really cool. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting how it impacts us for the next. One of my favorite quotes is a Bill Gates quote, and it's we overestimate what we will accomplish in 1 year, but we underestimate what we will accomplish in 10 years.
And it's
he's
very true.
Attributing it to technology mostly. And I don't know where we're going to be in 10 years, but it's going to be insane.
For sure.
I'm going to take us back to the diversity on a team and talk a little bit about like early career professionals, right? Because we're both saying how they can be as impactful on a project and as part of a team. You have any advice for the early career professionals that are entering our industry?
I love the way that my licensing and training system worked, which was that I had to try all these different things. I wasn't able to get my license until I'd done a bit of working with a contractor, I'd done some design, I'd tried all of these things. So I would say to everybody, try everything and then you can figure out what you like best and expose yourself to lots of different things because you've got that latitude in your early career to really adapt and do different things. And you still have all that college training where you can still do the math and everything. And I actually ended up turning to owner's rep work after I'd worked for a contractor in the UK. I was working on the Jubilee Line extension and Canary Wharf was a whole new area of the city that was being created. And I guess unless I'd actually had that experience, it was some beautiful canopies. If you're ever in London and down at Canary Wharf, those curvy glass canopies, they were designed by Norman Foster and I was the PM that did those. So every time I go back to London now, I have to go take a ride to Canary Wharf to admire my work, which is now, what, 30 years on, still looking really good. But I would never have known that I wanted to do project management if I hadn't had that experience of actually working in that environment with the designers, the contractors, the specialist fabricators. It was a really great experience. So I'd say to anyone going into the industry, take every opportunity and try everything. And then when you get to 8-10 years in and you've got your professional license in whatever your chosen discipline is, then you can think about what you enjoy the most and where you want to go with it. So yeah, definitely try everything while you're younger. It's easier that way.
I love that advice. And I don't think I ask that question like a lot. I don't know if that's ever been an answer. And I think it's so important. You're right. Try a bunch of different things. You never know what you're going to like. Like I was with someone the other day. They went to school for chemical engineering and now they're an estimator for a major contractor in New York City. And they were like, how did I end up here? And it was just, he tried different things when he was able to find a path he liked and he loves what he does. And that's really great.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a very diverse industry. There's many different roles you can play in the industry. And so why not go try a few of them before you decide what your sort of chosen direction is?
Yeah, get stuck in. Now tell me, what was the project? Because my sister is going to London soon. I'm going to tell her to go visit it.
The overall project was the Jubilee Line extension, which was an extension of a subway line in London. But quite impressively at the time, the owners, I was actually working for a contractor at the time, but the owners actually sought to bring a different architect to every station. So once you get onto the new part of the Jubilee Line, if you get off at every station is beautifully designed. But as you go out, I want to say east through London, and there really are some beautiful stations. So yeah, go ride the Jubilee Line and hop off all the stations from London Bridge, I think it is, to the east, if I'm remembering correctly. I've been in New York 20 years now. I'm having to think hard about this one. But yes, it's really interesting to see how you can bring architecture and engineering together to produce something that's still beautiful 30 years on.
What brought you to New York? Why make that jump?
My husband's job moved, and so I was the trailing spouse. Yeah. So that's how I ended up here. But I've loved every minute of the 20 years I've been here.
Very cool. But you were with Era prior as well?
Yes, I was. Absolutely. Yeah. I've been with them for 30 years now. Yeah.
30 years. You said that earlier. That's why I thought. So that was great that they were able to also facilitate that.
Yep. Very nice. We have a very diverse range of people in the office here, in the office around the world. There's a lot of people who've moved around the world, and we have people in all corners of the world that have moved around and brought experience with them and taken root in their new homes.
Well, I always like to ask, what's your the favorite projects you've ever worked on, or what do you think have been the most impactful projects you've worked on? And are those the same? Sometimes they're not.
I already talked about the Jubilee line. That was really great. I was working with a big contractor at the time, which was great fun. But I'm actually really enjoying the work that I'm doing in New York right now. For the last, I want to say 10 years, I've been working with a number of the agencies who have been implementing design build programs and getting to grips with alternative procurement. And so it's difficult to name a single client, but if I could name the genre instead, it would be about helping them do things differently and experiment with different ways of procurement to see if we can have better outcomes, getting projects in the ground cheaper, faster, better.
It must be so exciting to be able to do that, because that's like a rare opportunity. Most of the time, at least for me, when we get involved in a project, they have a certain direction they know they're going to take it. So it sounds like you get to be in like much earlier and help and guide in those decisions being made.
Yes, I have been very lucky that we have been able to actually decide on projects that are going to be pilots for different forms of delivery. So that has been really interesting. And it's great to see a lot of them in the ground now and not sort of stuck 10 years down the line over schedule and over budget, but actually being used.
Very cool. That's awesome. And so what's the future hold for Joanne? Next 5 to 10 years, where do you hope to make the most impact?
So I still love my work in New York, and that's something that I'm going to continue with. But I now have a regional role, so I am looking to do a lot more with my colleagues in Canada. We have a reasonably big team up there doing an awful lot of rail expansion work, both on the owner's side and working for contractors as well. And then also on the West Coast. I'm hoping to grow our team across the region over the next 5 to 10 years.
That's very exciting. What's the region? How big is that for you?
We have about, I want to say 2,000 people in the Americas right now. I think we're about 18,000 globally and about 2,000 in the region. So yeah, we've got a ways to go to grow here.
Very nice. Very cool. And so region will include the Americas and Canada? Is that how you guys are?
Americas, yeah, and Canada. Yeah. Wow. And we have some presence in Latin America, but relatively small right now.
Very cool. That's exciting. Hey, congrats. I think I did congratulate you last time I saw you, but just do it again here, because that's very exciting. And is that going to involve, I assume, some travel? Do you enjoy traveling? Is that going to be fun?
Yes, I love to travel. That's definitely a personal passion of mine. But yeah, it's really mainly to Canada and the West Coast. I don't get to too many tremendously exotic places.
Very cool. All right. This has been a lot of fun. I'm going to jump us into a lightning round. These will be like quick hitter, one word or two word answers. If you don't have an answer, just let me know. We'll move on. But do you have a favorite board game or card game?
No.
All right.
Sorry.
Cool. No, that's fine. I don't really know what I would have answered for that either. Maybe it's my favorite card. I don't know. Maybe like poker or something. I wouldn't have had a good answer. What's your favorite type of food? Cuisine. What's your favorite cuisine?
I love Mexican food.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I think you're the second guest in a row that's going to say Mexican food.
Yeah, I think I'd have to plump. If I could only choose one food to eat for the rest of my life, I think it would be Mexican.
And any particular, like New York, Californian, actual Mexican, like where
no,
do you
just generally.
Very nice. Very
Although
cool.
Actually, now you come to mention it, Indian food. I do love Indian food, but it's not always the best in New York. Not spicy enough.
Where's the best Indian food? Is it in London somewhere?
Oh, UK's pretty good. Yeah, UK's pretty good.
I know Gymkhana, right? In London, supposed to be very good. I haven't been.
I've been here too long. I don't know.
What's your favorite off-work activity to participate in? So like a sport or a hobby or something like that?
I do play tennis, but not enough. And I love to swim during the summer as well. But yeah, don't get enough time to play tennis these days, but I'd love to do more.
Yeah, that's very cool. I'm not a big like tennis player, but I like to watch sports. And
been a big Wimbledon weekend so I was glued to the TV this weekend.
Pretty cool. And I've recently started to really, I love to swim. I'm doing these like super sprint triathlons. So they're very short distance, but it's obviously bike, run, and swim. And so swimming is my favorite of the three. I absolutely hate running. And biking is fun, but swimming I've really enjoyed. And then the last question, if you could travel anywhere in the world, and you just said you love to travel, that you haven't been to, where would you go?
India? That I haven't been to. India is probably the one that I'd really love to go to that I haven't been to. And a bit more in Asia generally.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, I've never been to Southeast Asia. I think that would be a lot of fun.
And Alaska. And Alaska, actually. I haven't been to Alaska. That one, I'd love to go to Alaska.
Is it part of the new region and territory? You should
sadly
make...
not, no.
Oh.
But hopefully one day soon.
I went to Alaska when I was younger and it was awesome. It was fun. Mm-hmm. You can do the dog sled riding and you can like helicopter up to the top of the mountain. So hopefully you get to go. It'd be a lot of fun. And I've been to India many times. If you ever get to go and you want help putting an itinerary together.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
I'm here for that. But with that, this was amazing. That's all the time we have for today. Do you have any closing words or parting words you want to share?
No, this has been fun. This is my first podcast. Very happy and thank you for inviting me.
No, this was great. I love to have these conversations and learn more. I learned so much about the guests and it's always exciting. And all of the guests just contribute to the city and the state and the communities they work in. Just very exciting. And it's inspirational to me. So thank you. Thank you for being on. And with that, we'll include links to any of the resources we mentioned in the show notes. Thanks again for listening and keep an eye out for the next episode, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp., your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.